years was the second. We 100 years before had experienced something like that. But these may happen with greater frequency. People move far more today. We have more planes that are taking people from one part of the world to the other part of the world. And so it actually is really important in terms of thinking about global public health that we pay attention to who is governing in these spaces in the United States and elsewhere.
And very quickly, Professor Goodwin, the historic ballot measures enshrining the right to an abortion passed in 7 of the 10 states that they were introduced, passed in Arizona, Colorado, Nevada, Montana, Maryland, New York, and Missouri, where voters backed a measure that'll overturn one of the strictest abortion bans in the nation that prohibits abortion, even in cases of rape and incest. The significance of that, and yet, at the same time, Kamala Harris loses.
Well, again, if we parse this out, what we can see is that white women overwhelmingly voted for the former president, but yet also voted for the constitutional protection or statewide protections of abortion rights in their state. So they were able to parse these issues out, even though Donald Trump is, you know, articulated wanting to criminally punish women and wanting to and has appointed federal judges and justices on the lower courts as well as the Supreme Court in order to make it very difficult to access reproductive health care, yet they could parse their vote. And it's not just them, it's men too. And I want to make one clarification too. In Florida, it's being articulated that women in Florida rejected the ballot initiative there. No, overwhelmingly, the majority of people in that state voted for that initiative, except it was required that there be at least 60%. And what we know is that it's been over 57, 58% that voted for the initiative. So it failed by a small percentage, but it's worth noting that that was a requirement that meant more than a majority had to vote in support of that initiative.
I want to thank you both for being with us. There's so much more to talk about. And we've also extended this broadcast to 2 hours for those stations who are taking it. We have been speaking with Michelle Goodwin, who is a professor of constitutional law and global health policy at Georgetown University, founding director of the Center for Biotechnology and Global Health Policy. And we want to thank Professor Carol Anderson, professor of African American Studies at Emory University, speaking to us from Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, Georgia, that President Trump has won the state of Georgia. We thank you both for being with us. When we come back, Ralph Nader.
Lies, scandalizing, facing, dreams of hate, who celebrate with sin. A rope, a dope, the evil, with righteous bobbing and weaving, and let the good get even. Come on down. But welcome to the Terror Dome.
Come on down.
Power cannot run and hide, for it shouldn't be suicide. In a game, a fool without the rules. Got a hell of a nerve to just criticize. Every brother ain't a brother, cause a black hand squeezed a Malcolm X man. The shooting of Huey Newton from a hand pulled the trigger. Destroy yourself first, nothing worse than the mother's pain of a son slain in prison. Her can't wait for the state to side the fate. So this jam I dedicate places with the racist faces. Example one of many places. Weak, weak in speech, I speak from a lesson learned in Virginia. I don't smile in a line of fire, go wild and but it's from bass and drums, even violence. What you do, get your head ready instead of getting physically sweaty. When I get mad, I put it down on the pad.
Welcome to the Terror Dome by Public Enemy. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. As we continue to look at Donald Trump's victory over Kamala Harris and the Republicans taking control of the Senate, we don't know yet about the House. We're joined by Ralph Nader, the longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, former, well, four-time presidential candidate, author of many books, including most recently, Let's Start the Revolution, Tools for Displacing the Corporate State and building a country that works for the people. Ralph Nader is the founder of the monthly newspaper, The Capitol Hill Citizen. Ralph, thanks so much for joining us. Your response to Donald Trump's victory. It looks like he not only won the Electoral College, but will win the popular vote this time, as he didn't in the two past elections.
Well, Amy and Juan, there's going to be a lot to digest here. This is a collapse of the Democratic Party. They didn't get their vote out that they wanted. They were several million votes below what they expected, and of course that made the difference in an electoral college system in the swing states. But the problem is much more serious than that. Basically, we now are a country under a dictatorial corporate state. Trump is basically a magnet and a trap for the Democrats. They spent tens of millions of dollars on ads going after Trump instead of going after the 4 years that Trump deep-sixed so many critical issues and positions in his term as president. So the problem is it's so many variables here to deal with. It all started, Amy, when the Democrats abandoned half the country to the red states. That's devastating. Then they started getting corporate cash in 1979, dialing for the same commercial values. That blurred their difference from the New Deal-type Democrats to the corporate Democrats. Then they contracted out the election to these corporate conflicted profiteering consulting firms, which the mass media never seemed to want to investigate in this campaign. And then they abandoned public media. Basically, they abandoned radio to the Rush Limbaughs and created the Reagan Democrats. And then they never learned from their mistakes. They didn't learn from the mistakes of Hillary Clinton in 2016. Then they never fire anybody after they lose in one state after another to horrendous, the worst Republican Party in history. And so what is the message that they gave to the American people? The message is Trump is terrible, and you can't believe how bad the Republican Party is. It's too general a message, just simple. A vast majority of people think corporations have too much control over their lives. They didn't fill the blanks, denial of health care benefits. And they didn't fill the blanks on a living wage. They didn't fill the blanks on cracking down on corporate crooks. They didn't fill the blanks on reversing a tax system which undertaxes the very wealthy and the big corporations. They didn't reverse themselves really on trade. They didn't know how to rebut Trump on immigration. And we called the people coming in rapists, criminals, drug traffickers, etc. Instead of saying, well, they're fleeing oppressive countries that are backed by the U.S. dictators and oligarchs in Central and South America. They didn't say that millions of Americans trust immigrants to harvest their food, to care for their children, to care for elderly, to provide critical services that nobody wants to work in the U.S. So, there's such a bill of particulars against this Democratic Party. And what's happened, of course, is that millions of people are basically saying, we're sick of throwaway lines. We're sick of not having the government return the benefits of massive taxation to us. We're sick of all we hear about is empire abroad. All we hear about is more military budgets by the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress, giving the generals more than they asked for, eating the public budgets that should be providing public services and public infrastructure in communities all over the country, creating key jobs. Now, we tried to straighten out these Democrats. 24 civic leaders in 2022, going into the present time, tried to tell them how to communicate, what to communicate with all the people, and they didn't listen. The Democratic Party severed any kind of response. That's Nancy Pelosi, that's Chuck Schumer, you name them, with the civic community in Washington, D.C. The ones that...
Ralph, let me ask you, for the progressive movement now as it faces the return of Donald Trump, what do you think are the next steps in terms of resistance or reorganization that have to occur?
Well, it's got to be focused on Congress. The House is not yet resolved, but only Congress can stop the Trumpsters. It isn't just Trump. Trump is a figurehead. Trump is a bullhorn. It's the Trumpsters. It's the Heritage Foundation. It's 2025. It's the takeover of departments that are dedicated to standing up for the people, the Environmental Protection Bureau, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the Auto Safety Bureau, the Federal Trade Commission, the Justice Department. These are all going to be turned into virulent, vengeful, or inactive governments. They want to destroy the civil service, bring it back to the spoils system. We're in for huge turmoil. One can say that the election yesterday really elected President Vance. Trump's not going to last. He's going to disintegrate. And Vance is in a position to become the next president. So what has to be done, one, is massive focus on Congress, which is the main constitutionally authorized lever to hold the executive branch accountable. Build for 2026. The Democrats will have far fewer people up for the Senate than the Republicans, unlike this year. And they've got to stop blasting away at people who want to challenge the Democratic Party. The party says to everybody on their side, you know how bad the Republicans are? You got nowhere to go. They spent a lot of money attacking the Green Party, the tiny Green Party, instead of listening to William Barber, Reverend William Barber, who said, look, there's 80 million people who aren't going to vote. A lot of them are low-wage workers. If you get 15% of low-wage workers who aren't voting to go to the polls, the Democrats would have won. They didn't listen to them. They didn't listen to all the citizen groups who know how to talk to people, not just liberal patients or liberal workers, but conservative workers, conservative patients. Remember, a vast majority of this country wants to tax the undertaxed wealthy in the corporation. They want to break up the big banks. And above all, in poll after poll, they say that corporations have too much control over their lives. Sherrod Brown pulled in his horns and lost. Bernie Sanders campaigned on corporate power, and he won in a landslide in Vermont. And Harris refused to campaign with Bernie Sanders, but she campaigned in several states with Liz Cheney of the criminal Cheney family in the invasion of Iraq that killed over a million Iraqis. So the blunders were endless. It was basically turning their back on the progressive, the genuine populist constituency in this country. And Bernie, of course, supported Harris, but his positions were rejected constantly. He said, get the living wage up, get universal health care up, crack down on corporate crooks, increase Social Security benefits that have been frozen for over 50 years, and get the taxation on the wealthy. She ignored all that. Just throwaway lines.
Ralph Nader, we're also joined in Madison, Wisconsin, by John Nichols, the nation's national affairs correspondent, author of more than a dozen books, including his latest, co-written with Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who just won re-election last night. The book is called It's Okay to Be Angry About Capitalism. You've just listened to Ralph Nader talking about the problems with the Democratic position that was represented by Kamala Harris. If you can talk about how this played out in the Senate races, because you're in Wisconsin, which Trump won, but it looks like Tammy Baldwin has eked out a victory to retain her Senate seat. And then in Ohio, Bernie Moreno, the luxury car dealer, cryptocurrency millionaire, beat out Sherrod Brown, who opposed the Iraq War, opposed the USA Patriot Act, an angry and early champion of marriage equality and labor activist. John Nichols, take us through these Senate races and then what it means, the positions that Kamala Harris took. In a sense, not exactly shunning Bernie Sanders, but as Ralph said, not campaigning with her, with him.
No, I think Ralph Nader's points are very accurate. And in fact, I was actually taking notes as I was listening here. I would also say one other thing. Ralph was talking about this throughout the campaign, and inspired by him, I wrote a number of articles on getting the issue of trade into this campaign at the presidential level, and it just didn't happen. And there's a host of other issues that didn't as well. And that you can see writ large in the Senate and the House races. You're not going to get a pure read one way or the other, but you can get real indications. As Ralph Nader said, Bernie Sanders won by a landslide in Vermont. And he did that while actually spending a good deal of his time out on the campaign trail in other states, raising so many of the points that Ralph Nader just raised, and also a host of others on these issues. Tammy Baldwin won in Wisconsin, and I think that's a race that really is going to be worthy of dissection, because Tammy Baldwin was one of the few candidates running for the Senate on the Democratic side that consistently ran ads that featured workers and union members, multiracial, multi-ethnic, talking about their challenges, pensions being taken away, bad trade policies, all of these things that we're discussing here today. And so though she won very, very narrowly, Tammy Baldwin's victory is actually a real example of what you can do, because she ran, and we'll get the exact figures, it looks like she ran about 60,000 votes ahead of the top of the ticket in Wisconsin. That was obviously deciding. Let me give you a few more details on where we're at. One of the things that Ralph Nader just said that's really important is that Congress is essential in all of these equations. We have to look at the Congress as a potential, not a certain, but a potential place of opposition and an actual ability to stop some of the things that Donald Trump would want to do as president. In the Senate races right now, it is absolutely clear the Republicans have won the Senate. They're going to have a majority of at least 52-48, and I fear that will probably expand a little bit. There are still technically six uncalled races. I think about four of them could go to the Democrats, two of them a little shakier. If that majority there in the Senate is a big deal, because if it's a 52-48, you still have some ability to move a couple of the Republican senators who were not supportive of Trump over into a coalition to at least stop some things. If the majority expands for the Republicans, that's going to be a lot harder. But one of the things that we have to focus on right away is organizing in the states where there are Republican senators who could be moved or who might be moved on particular issues. That actually happened during Trump's first term on some education issues, where activists, teachers union activists in places like Alaska, got Lisa Murkowski to move on particular issues, very vital votes. Now let's flip over to the House of Representatives, because the House of Representatives is, if it has a Democratic majority, and that is not assured, but if it gets a Democratic majority, it will become the base of opposition to Trump's presidency. There should not be a, oh, you know, let's see if we can find places to work together. There should be a clear signal that, look, this House of Representatives is going to do everything in its power to stop bad initiatives. They have a lot of budget power. They have a lot of power on approving all sorts of bills on all sorts of issues. They have to have a united caucus. What's critical in the House is the number of seats that are still up for grabs. I looked just before we came on air. There are 54 seats up for grabs. Most of them are on the West Coast in California, Washington, and Oregon, very Democratic states. But there are also some out in the Midwest and some a number even on the East Coast. Once we get a read on where the House is, I think that the likelihood is that it will not be a large Democratic majority if the Democrats win it. And again, I emphasize they may not win it. But if they do win it, it won't be a large majority. But if it is, you know, if it's even three or four seats, that's enough space if Speaker Hakeem Jeffries and other people recognize their critical role as a check and balance on the administration.
If, in fact, the House goes Democrat. But, John, we're going to have time to also talk about this in the second hour. But I also wanted to address the issue of foreign policy from Dearborn, Michigan. To talk about Donald Trump's election, we want to go to Michigan, where we're joined by Linda Sarsour, a Palestinian-American Muslim organizer, author of We're Not Here to Be Bystanders, co-founder of Empower Action Fund. Yes, Dearborn, the Arab of a majority city. Trump won 42% of the vote over Vice President Kamala Harris, who received 36%. Jill Stein received 18%. Stein campaigned calling for an arms embargo against Israel. And I also want to hear what Ralph Nader has to say about this. Linda Sarsour, if you can respond, we spoke to you last night. Now a lot of the results are in. If you can comment on what happened and what a Trump presidency will mean for Israel-Palestine.
I appreciated hearing Ralph Nader's analysis, which I share, and this is all goes to the feet of the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party literally marginalized Arab American, Palestinian, and Muslim American voters. Kamala Harris did not really, in my opinion, make any effort to really win over the votes of these demographics. Kamala Harris continued to parrot the usual talking point about humanitarian aid and about what's happening in Gaza being devastated without any action plan. She was asked many times, would you break from the policies of Joe Biden or in the ways in which Joe Biden has addressed the genocide in Gaza? And she has said no multiple times. Again, Donald Trump engaged in outreach in the Muslim American community. He went and visited mosques. He met with religious leaders. He had billboards all across Dearborn that were multilingual in the language, in Arabic languages, in Bangla, in Urdu. And whether or not people agree with Donald Trump or whether or not, and you know me, Amy, I'm having deja vu of 2016. I was a frontline organizer when Donald Trump was president. So I'm not looking forward to the next 4 years. But the Trump campaign did the outreach. They filled in a gap that was left by the Democratic Party. And all Kamala Harris had to say in this election was, I will uphold international law. I will actually enforce the laws we already have on the books when it comes to military aid to any country violating human rights. But the campaign made a calculation. They made a calculation that they did not need Arab American, Muslim American, and Palestinian American voters, that they can actually win this election without this important electorate. They were too busy courting Liz Cheney and her friends instead of coming to Michigan and actually having deep, courageous conversations with the critics of the Kamala and Biden administration. So this is a devastating moment for our communities. Donald Trump is someone that we know very well. We don't only know him on domestic policy, we know him also on foreign policy. He gave sovereignty to Israel over the Golan Heights. He declared Jerusalem the capital of Israel. There is an Israeli settlement that is named after Donald Trump. His son-in-law, Jared Kushner, believes that Gaza is this beautiful waterfront property. We are in going to be in big trouble. And I blame that solely on the Democratic Party and one of the worst run campaigns that I've seen in my 23 years in organizing.
And Linda, I wanted to ask you something I asked earlier to some of our other guests. There was not a large outpouring of independent votes, but there definitely was a decline in the overall Democratic vote. Kamala Harris apparently gotten 15 million votes less than sleepy Joe Biden did in 2020. I'm wondering what your sense was, that those who stayed home are really a reflection of some of the failures of the Democrats this time around.
Absolutely. And the thing that people don't want to talk about, and as you know, the Democratic Party is not a fan of mine because they don't like to listen to critics who actually are organizers and know how to mobilize communities. Somebody should ask the Democratic Party, how much money did you invest in Black and Brown led organizations who do get out the vote efforts, who engage and build power locally in communities? Somebody needs to ask them that question. They spent a majority of their money on ads, on television ads, and really ignored the grassroots. I was on the ground in Pitt County, North Carolina. I was in Saginaw, Michigan. I was in Dearborn. I went to Georgia, and I did not see the type of field operation that is worthy of our communities. And Joe Biden had the Democratic House, Senate, and White House in his first 2 years, and he couldn't deliver on things like protecting and expanding voting rights. He blamed Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema for being obstacles to his agenda. He couldn't even get two Democrats in line to pass legislation. Lots of women across the country care about things like reproductive rights. Why didn't the Joe Biden administration push Congress to codify Roe? We are in this situation because Democrats want to be in power, but they don't know how to use their power once they are in office. And that is a failure of the party. And the party has to go back to its roots if it wants to move from here. You are either going to be loyal to your base, which majority supported ceasefire and support arms embargo against Israel, that support progressive issues, or you're going to continue to try to recruit a constituency that does not exist, that did not turn out for you in this election. And I hope somebody in the campaign right now is sitting and reflecting on this, and hopefully some people are fired and no longer will be working for the party after this election.
Doris, Palestinian American. Ralph Nader, you are Lebanese American. We only have a minute, but your response on the issue of the Democratic position, the Biden-Harris position on Israel, Palestine, and Lebanon right now, and what you think has to happen. Because, in fact, the Democrats are in power right now before Trump takes over.
Well, you asking me?
I am.
Yeah. Well, Biden's projecting weakness. There are a lot of voters who want strength, and Trump understands that. And on the Middle East, he's projecting incredible weakness. That's why we call him Bibi Biden and his Secretary of State, Bibi Blinken. He's giving Netanyahu whatever he wants, daily shipments of deadly weapons of mass destruction, diplomatic cover, veto in the U.N., pushing allied countries to get in line. He even refuses to demand that Netanyahu let American reporters in to Gaza to report what's going on. He won't even allow airlifting at the request of American doctors who were over in Gaza, airlifting burned babies and amputee children for treatment in ready and able American hospitals. He is a co-combatant with the Palestinian Holocaust and the genocide that's going on, and Israel's making no bones of this. Netanyahu wants the whole of Palestine, the West Bank, southern Lebanon to the Litani River, and it's all go signal from Biden. So he's projecting weakness here. He is weakly representing the mighty United States of America as if he's an adjunct, a poodle. For the Netanyahu regime.
We have to leave it there. That does it for this hour. I want to thank Ralph Nader, Linda Sarsour, and John Nichols of The Nation. This is Democracy Now!, War, Peace, and the Presidency. Stay tuned for hour two of our expanded post-election show right here. Or if the station isn't running it, you can go to democracynow.org. And on this day, I want to wish a happy birthday to John Hamilton and Emily Anderson, and our deepest condolences to our producer, Messiah Rhodes, on the passing of his dad, David Rhodes. Democracy Now! Produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This year's fund drive is over. If you missed supporting our campaign in real time, You're not too late. Donate now at cjsffunddrive.ca or text DONATE to 778-782-2573 and become radio's best friend.
Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.